introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he puts
look at this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right. We are back with an emergency, I guess an emergency episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me at Twitter, Brown Jason, and we're going to jump right to it. Got a fun episode here. Got a bonus cut from our man, Dr. Eric Eager, coming in. We're talking about what's going on with the Vikings, but, you know, we're going to jump in. No QB1 tonight, duty calls. But, you know, we got Miles, we got Sexy Prince, and we're just going to do this thing. So, Miles, how you doing? How you been? How you feeling about what's going on with these Vikings at this point in the season?
I'm good, but I mean, I've been better in terms of how the Vikings are doing. But, yeah, it's been a crazy, I know it's been a crazy 24 hours, but it's also been a crazy weeks, month and a half plus. Like, yeah, there's definitely been a lot of disconnect going on in that within the organization. So it's been crazy, but also not surprising at the same time.
Yeah, man, you could definitely feel that. And, you know, Sexy Prince, I got stuck right there when I was calling. I was like, Sexy Prince, Yinka.
Yeah,
didn't know which way to go with that, but we back here. Yinka, what's going on, my man? Just finished up the workout. How you feeling about, I guess, the workout and the season so far?
Yeah, I mean, you sounded like one of my old, like, elementary school teachers who saw my name and were just like, I don't want to get it wrong, but...
Yeah, you know, just straight freeze, even though they're all spelled phonetically.
Right, I'm staying! no, the workout was good. You know, I'm kind of with Miles where, you know, it would have been nice to be having a victory conversation right now. But, you know, without... We know that there's always going to be drama with the Vikings. So, yeah, let's just get into it.
All right, well, let's hop to it. And, you know, listeners, just so you know, if you're wondering, you know, if Yinka's volume is a little down or it comes and goes a little bit, as per usual, Yinka is not sitting in front of his computer doing the pod. He is on the move, in the car, straight from the gym, on the pocket, on the Climbing the Pocket podcast to get these takes off as he, I guess, drives home or to his, you know, second or third or fourth job. So we're going to get there. And if his microphone starts to fade out, we'll yell at him and tell him to come back. But Miles, you know, because I need to get your takes first, because during the games, you know, Prince, JR, and myself, we fire off all those emotional in the moment takes right away in the group message and, you know, get all those ridiculous kind of, you know, off the cuff takes that shouldn't make it onto the timeline. We have that outlet. You log off of everything during all of the games, which is probably the smarter way to go. If we're just being real, it's probably the smarter way to go. Better for your blood pressure and all that kind of stuff. But as you were watching that...
Well, we watched the Vikings, so nothing's good for our blood pressure.
Yeah,
so.
You're right. But as you were watching that horrible, horrible, terrible, awful performance from... the Vikings offense, Kirk Cousins, just really, there was nothing good going on that you could take away from the offensive performance. The defense, I mean, they gave up a lot in the run, but the thing about giving up a lot in the run is they weren't giving up a lot of points. You know, right. They don't give up 6 points until well into the game. What were your thoughts as that game progressed and you were seeing what you were seeing? How did you feel about, you know, the way Cousins looked out there and just the way the team performed in general?
Oh, man. Like you said, I don't like to log on Twitter during the games just because I don't like the overreactions to literally every single play, dissecting every single play in the moment. I mean, I'm doing it while I'm watching the game, but like to put it out in the timeline and make it act like, you know, one great play means that, you know, the Vikings are going to dominate or one bad play means they're going to get blown out. I just don't like to do that. But anyways, for me, the worst part about last night's game was the defense played so well for the most part that they gave me hope because the Vikings were in striking distance. Like the Vikings were there until obviously late in the fourth quarter, the Vikings were were within one score of taking the lead even. So they gave us that hope. The turnover before the half was probably, I knew that was going to come back to bite us in terms of Eric Hendricks not catching it clean and likely running it back for a pick six. Cause I knew the way the offense was going that would have been the game changer. Probably. I'm not saying that means they would have won the game, but I think adding that momentum before the half would have been, it might have changed the outcome of the game. On offense, man, I mean, yeah, the run game was there. I think DeFilippo, RIP, was kind of trying to prove a point that, like, yeah, we can try and run the ball 20 plus times a game, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to how the passing game goes, how we get creative in the passing game, how we get our guys involved. And I think that the biggest issue outside of Cousins and the O-line and the play calling was just how teams can approach our offense, how they can defend our offense right now. At least under DeFilippo, it was hard for him to get creative when Seattle was literally double teaming Thielen and Diggs, at least for the first half, I think majority of the first half. And I'm not quite sure how much it was going on in the second, but we saw it highlighted in the first half. But that was a big problem. Like we've been saying, they don't have that third true passing threat that really is going to help take away or help, you know, punish a defense for trying to double team your two best players. We don't have that guy. Yes, Dalvin Cook is phenomenal. You get him in space, he could break tackles. But one thing he's not is he's not a pure route runner. He's not a pure like receiver. Yes, he can catch the ball well out of the backfield. You can put him out in little swings and you know, quick hitting routes. But he's not like going to break you down in a route. He's not gonna do that. He's not like an Alvin Kamara. That's not his skill set, and that's fine. Like, it doesn't mean he's not a dynamic running back. Doesn't mean he's not you know, phenomenal at what he does. But he's just not that style of running back to be that style of receiver that I think some people believe. And then Kyle Rudolph, great red zone threat, good chain mover, but he's not going to beat you deep. He's not going to outrun you. He's not going to get, he's mainly, there's been a lot of yak from him this season because they've schemed it that way, but he's not the guy I want getting out into space because he's not going to break off a 35 plus yard run after catch. Like, that's just not his style. They don't have that third receiving threat that's really going to take to help loosen things up for Thielen and Diggs. And I think that was really evident last night, especially when you're not being able to run the ball consistently. We know that that's what Zimmer wants to do. And when they can't do that, teams are really just going to load up the box and then double team your two best players. And then it's kind of like, now what? Especially when your other receivers aren't really doing a lot to get open or create that separation that you'd like to see. And then your interior offensive line is giving up pressure. It's really hurting overall. And then, you know, jumping into the quarterback situation, you know, Cousins really did, especially early on. It took him a long time to find any kind of rhythm. And I don't think we really saw any kind of rhythm until that last drive. And that's the one that didn't matter. Like, that drive didn't really matter. And yeah, there was that drive where they got stalled out in the fourth and two, I think it was, on the 2 yard line. But other than that, he looked, especially early on, he looked really skittish in the pocket. He looked very, he just looked really worried, and he looked like he was seeing ghosts out there. And I know we saw that last week. I think there was I can't remember. It's happened quite a bit throughout the season, a little bit, because earlier on in the season we saw him stand in there and take some hits. Play a little bit, perform a little bit better than we've seen down the stretch. And I think some of those pressures are kind of getting to him. And then you start seeing him he's missing some open receivers at the same time. Like, we saw Diggs and Thielen get open at times that he might have missed. Maybe the read wasn't there because of the way the guys were being double teamed. Whatever it was, it just didn't look right. The offense did not look in sync at all last night. And it was evident that there's a major disconnect between the offensive coordinator, the quarterback, and the head coach. So I think it's evident now that the scenario of the situation that happened today with DeFilippo getting fired?
Yeah, so one of the things that I mean, we talked about it, you know, after the Pats game, we're talking about it again, where teams just double teamed our, you know, our best two weapons, so the outside receivers, made Cousins hold the ball a little bit longer, and that seems to have been the book on him for a while. Like, if he holds the ball, if he can't get it out quick, then he starts to maybe panic a little bit, you know, in the pocket. I guess, Miles, before we go to Yankee here, did teams just not think to do that last season? Like, because I don't really remember us having conversations about, you know, teams just deciding they were going to just shut down Diggs and Thielen the way that we've been really having the conversation over the past couple weeks, where it's just, you know, double team those guys and dare them to beat you with somebody else.
Well, I think last year there's a couple scenarios. Pat Shurmur obviously did a lot more to move Case Keenum out of the pocket to help create shorter fields or, you know, easier reads for Case Keenum and kind of scheme guys to get open. And then at the same time, they ran the ball a lot better last year, more on a more consistent basis. I know we've talked about this, Jason, and it's not of vital importance, but we know that it can help an offense if you run well. Like, it's never a bad thing to run the ball well. And that, I think that's one major factor, is when you can run the ball well, it's a lot harder to take away everything you're doing in the pass game. And that goes hand in hand with Pat Shurmur kind of scheming to get his quarterback on the move, to move the pocket a little bit and to kind of create for his other playmakers. And then the last bit of it, Jarius Wright really was that, you know, that key third wide receiver. I think this offense is really missing and they're really hurting right now. I'm not saying Jarius Wright would have been like everything this offense needs right now, but I think he'd definitely be helping what they're missing. And they're really missing that third trustful wide receiver that can consistently get open and consistently catch the ball and help move the chains or, you know, get some yak. So they don't really have that right now, and it's really hurting them.
Oh, Jarius, that feels like a perfect segue. Prince, you know, what are your thoughts?
I know, right?
on everything that we just talked about there, you know, the Vikings needing Jarius Wright. And we'll start with the game, and then, you know, I guess if it brings us back to Jarius and you have takes you fire off on that, by all means feel free. But as you were watching the game, just kind of take us through what you were thinking, I guess your emotions of the ups and downs of Kirk and the offense early. And I guess also, did you end up doing that Boothcast thing? And if so, how'd that go?
I can answer the second question first. No, we didn't, because me and Arif got together and we were waiting on the technology to we essentially needed the app to be approved by iTunes and Apple and stuff. And it didn't in time, so we weren't able to do it. But that's something that we're probably looking to do for the Miami game. So continue to kind of look out for that. We'll tweet it out and stuff. As far as the game, there was just like this aura that existed where it just felt as if there were a number of players that just didn't want to be on the field or just like didn't seem as if, you know, like they didn't have as much energy as they typically do to go out and play. You could tell very early Kirk was off. You could tell Adam Thielen was playing fine. It's just like they weren't having very much chemistry. I think Diggs really similar. You know, I think he was consistently getting open the same exact way. It's just that I don't know if I could necessarily blame Kirk in this game. It didn't feel as if this was like, man, Kirk is just playing poorly. It just felt as if he was like, I am tired of running this offense. And you could see kind of the boredom and the effort that existed there with him, you know, finding our playmakers and finding the guys that like really make this offense run. And like Adam Thielen, for the first time in the last 2 years, didn't have a single catch in the first half. And it was just weird to see that this offense almost was giving up before anything even happened. I mean, by halftime, the game was still fairly close. So, I mean, those were my initial thoughts. Like Miles had mentioned, I thought the defense was playing really, really well, doing a good job. I mean, obviously, Russell Wilson is Russell Wilson. He can find avenues to burn you with his legs, highly efficient with his arm. I think was playing at a pretty decent level. Maybe not his best game, but still playing pretty efficiently. And you just felt like the defense was giving everything that they could against a quarterback of that caliber. And it just got to the point where the offense just wasn't doing enough. You know, it was up until like the second half before we even reached, you know, past the midfield. And it was like, what is going on with the offense? So it felt like this was like the last little bit of energy we had in that developable offense where he was like, I'm just at my wit's end. I don't know how to fix it. And in my opinion, it showed, you know, like, and it got to the point where he's just, developable is just like, fine, I'll just run the ball. And that wasn't really working at times. The utilization of Dalvin Cook, you know, I think JR had a really interesting point where, like, I think we've tried to make Dalvin Cook into our superstar Alvin Kamara, you know, I guess a Kareem Hunt, I know, a little controversial to say, but like the way that he played and whatnot, and how they, you know, David Johnson, how they can go out on routes and really be an effective part of the passing game as well as in the run game. But he might not be that guy. He might just be a guy who's super athletic, super talented. But we need to find more unique ways to, you know, just hand the ball off to him. Still find ways to get him ball in space and stuff, but he just might not be as big of a receiving threat as we thought he was initially coming out. With that being said, I felt there was a point where I think the Vikings had the Cousins had missed Thielen. And I think there was a shot of DeFilippo on the sidelines. And you could just kind of tell that it's almost like he knew. He like, this was my last opportunity to really truly salvage my job and fix whatever issues that they were having. But with the fact that he wants to run a certain kind of offense, Kirk wants to run a certain kind of offense, and then Zimmer wants to run a certain kind of offense. When you have the quarterback, the OC, and the head coach all not agreeing with what kind of offense that they want to run, I think that's just recipe for a disaster. And that's what we saw from the time on it. We all agreed, you know, kind of privately that, you know, probably was in their best interest to let go of DeFilippo. You know, if it is broke, you better fix it. And we've seen enough times where the Vikings will try to limp on and it'll get better. But I think it speaks to the maturation of this organization where we've been in situations where this team holds on to players and coaches way longer than they probably should have. So I think with Zimmer's philosophy, I think he's still going to need to evolve. Like, this is no longer the 90s or early 2000s. I think he's going to have to evolve. You know, running the football, I still think that the NFL has a place to run the football, but I mean, even the way in which he employs the running game, I think is outdated. And I think that's one of the biggest hangups is he's still trying to run kind of smash mouth, you know, run the ball down their throat football. And we don't have the guys on the offensive line to do that as well as, I mean, that's not the styles of a guy like Dalvin Cook, who's your premier back.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point that you bring up. Yeah. And I'm interested because, you know, coming into this season, John DeFilippo was a head coaching candidate, kind of a hot up and coming coach coming out of, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles organization, fresh off the Super Bowl and all that kind of stuff. And I'll be interested to see if he still ends up getting someplace else where either he, you know, gets a head coaching opportunity or potentially gets to go be an OC somewhere else. Because I know that when Norv was here, we were hating on Norv a lot because of the type of offense that he was running and you know, that power scheme, deep drops, under center, all those kind of things seemed really outdated. And I know Vikings fans in large measure were clowning the signing when the Panthers brought him in. But it seems as though, you know, Norv has kind of, you know, evolved as a coach and is opening things up a little bit more. I mean, Shermer obviously was able to come in and do some things and get the playmakers involved. And, you know, we had a great season last year. And he's still doing, you know, good work with the Giants in terms of what he's been doing. And, you know, the unfortunate having Eli and Kirk having such similar numbers this year. But it'll be interesting to see how DeFilippo does someplace else. Because, yeah, you brought up the point where everyone's not on the same page. And I'm really, really starting to wonder, with us going through OCs at the rate that we're having now, how much of this is Zimmer not wanting to really and truly allow an offense to just be completely wide open because of the risk of what it might do to his defense versus, you know, some of the other things that could be going on there. So I guess it'll be interesting to see the type of O or the type of things that Stefanski does when he comes in. But yeah, I guess, you know, we hear Zimmer talk about running the ball a lot. I guess, Miles, I want to get your take on something that Matt Collar has said before. And then when I recorded with Eric before our show, that he also brought up, where he felt that, you know, Zimmer's criticism of JDF or saying that we need to run the ball more was just kind of a way to be critical of the offense in general and, you know, Kirk Cousins indirectly without calling Kirk out directly, since, you know, Kirk is definitely going to be there for the next 3 years. And, just, you know, if Zim starts kind of a war in the media with him, Zim would likely be the one who got fired. So I guess, what are your thoughts on kind of that, with Zim knowing the running game isn't really the way that you're going to win, but he's still feeling the need to have to criticize and maybe, you know, let folks know that he's not happy with them in the media? Do you think that's what he's doing, or was it just he wants to run the ball more and he wants to run the ball more and he wants to run the ball more?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's he wants to be able to control the clock on offense, and he feels, obviously, when you don't run the ball well, it's harder to do that, especially with if you're not as efficient passing the ball as you'd like to be. Like, if they were, you know, getting first downs, eating clock, not turning the ball over, I don't think you'd see as much of an issue from Zimmer. But I mean, they're doing that and they're not running the ball well. So, like, we know Zimmer wants to play hard-nosed football, whatever, like a little bit more of that old school. But it makes me wonder, though, like, if the team obviously was scoring points and they were more efficient, I don't think it would matter to Zimmer. I think he'd be fine with it. At the end of the day, I do think running the ball is important to him. I think he wants that ball control. He wants his defense to kind of stay off the field as often as possible. I mean, it makes sense, right? You'd want your offense to control the clock, control the game, rather than your defense. But yeah, I think there's a combination of both there. I think if the offense wasn't turning the ball over and they were doing a better job scoring on a consistent basis, then I don't think Zimmer would be as open about the issue. And I also feel like he does want to run the ball more to help control the clock, and I think that, to him, is a part of the problem, is that they're not running the ball and they're not doing it well. So I think he feels that they need to find a way to run the ball better, and I think no matter what, he wants that, whether it's true or not. That just seems like Zimmer's way of, he wants them to run the ball more.
Yeah, and so, yeah, to that thought, because that's something that obviously he's been saying quite a bit. And, you know, Warren Sharp put out a thread today that was interesting. He was talking about how poorly the Vikings have done, generally speaking, when they've really committed to trying to run the ball early, because they can't do it. Like, they're not good at it. So I understand wanting to run the ball, but at what point do you just say, hey, maybe this ain't the season, we need to, you know, bolster our coaching staff across the O-line or whatever it might be to get some better run schemes in here? Because if your memory serves, oftentimes it's, you know, the offensive line coach that helps to design, you know, kind of the run game and the schemes that we're going to use to effectively run the ball. Like, on the one hand, I get wanting to be more balanced or wanting to run, but how do you weigh that out? And I guess, you know, Yinka, you can jump in, Miles, you can, you know, follow up. How do you balance that out with the fact that you just can't do it? Like, you're just not good at it. It's something that when you do run the ball on early downs, way more often than not, you end up putting yourself behind the chains. And then as soon as you get yourself behind the chains and teams know you're likely to pass the ball, yep, your offensive line also can't hold up in pass pro. So yeah, how do you get that balance? And what is actually the best way to run this Vikings offense as we go forward?
Yeah. Let me chime in real quick on that. This is kind of why it's so important to know who, A, your personnel, and B, more importantly, who your quarterback is. Kirk Cousins, as we know, is one of the worst quarterbacks in the league currently right now on third and long type situations. So obviously, either running the ball on second down or running in a situation where you're going to put yourself in, you know, longer down and distance, is disadvantageous to your quarterback. You know, there are certain quarterbacks in the league who thrive really, really well in the intermediate game or whatnot, who, if you put them down in third and seven, third and eight, they'll succeed, you know, better than most quarterbacks in the league. This is one of those conversations where I think is a little bit more nuanced, because I don't think it's a one size fits all for your offense. Again, some quarterbacks are just better and have made their living thriving on third downs. Granted, the Vikings had, this is my time where I plug my Jarius Wright take. This is the time where when you had a guy who was as consistent as Jarius Wright on third down specifically, that really helped that offense to maybe stay above the chains or continue to, you know, make those take those chances on second down, you know, to run some of those run plays and whatnot. This isn't the offense, because you don't have the guy that's consistently on third down is going to make that play. So with that being said, you're not good at it, in part because you're not good at running the football. And the second part is, like, you also don't have a quarterback who thrives on, or one of his strengths is being able to be cold-blooded on third and long situations. He's fantastic on third and short situations, but not as great on third and long situations. So when you're taking that into account, you know, you're not always going to be like, oh, well, second and long, we can't ever run. There's second and short, we have to run, or whatever the case is. But you have to build your tendencies to match what your quarterback strengths are. And with that being said, that's not one of Kirk's. So then you completely abandon the run on second downs, but it's like, you know, it's disadvantageous to the guy who's more often not going to put you in a position to get that first down. So that's how I would first think about building kind of game plans, as well as, you know, circling my scheme around the talent that I have.
Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit here. Embarrassing performance notwithstanding, you know, and again, listeners will hear some of this after kind of we wrap this portion of the show when we have our guest appearance by Eric from Pro Football Focus. But I mean, there's a lot of sadness, anger, depression, lashing out, all kinds of things going on across kind of the Vikings landscape of social media. But the Vikings still have a pretty good shot at making the playoffs. I guess from your perspective, Miles, yeah, I mean, the Vikings still have, I think, like a 53% chance of getting into the playoffs. Like, what are your thoughts on the rest of this season? Because it feels like a lot of people, and in some ways probably myself included, have started to shift gears and really started thinking about, you know, next season and things that the Vikings can do to make themselves better in the offseason when the playoffs are still a highly probable outcome. Well, a more probable than not outcome would probably be the more accurate way of saying that. I guess, where are you with the season? Are you still invested in the Vikings and what they need to do and where they're going to go? Or are you like so many others, and it seems that, you know, you're kind of, you know, on to, you know, what they can do to be better in 2019?
Well, I think I'm one of those people, I always want to look ahead. I do that. I like to see what might be available in the upcoming offseason. I always look at free agents. I always look at the draft a little bit, just to kind of just see what I'm like looking at as the season goes. But to your point, it's really easy to feel like the season's basically over right now. I mean, they've lost every big game. They've lost, well, almost every big game. I think the Packer game is the only one in the last couple, you know, this season where, you know, that we've really needed that they've won. Other than that, though, they haven't, you know, they've kind of shriveled in the rest of those games. So it really does feel like the season is over. It feels like they shouldn't be in the playoffs. It feels like they're not a playoff team. But what the funny part is they're still in that playoff hunt. They're leading. They're, you know, if the playoffs started right now, they'd be the sixth seed, which is kind of crazy to think about. But as bad as the Vikings have been this season, the NFC across the board, I mean, obviously outside of the top four or five teams, have been really bad. Like, the Vikings have played extremely poor, and yet they're still in a position to put themselves into the playoffs because the rest of the NFC has been so poor. And they've beaten some of those teams that are, like, right on their heels. So it's kind of a funny situation right now. So do I feel like the team is a playoff caliber team? No, but at the same time, do I feel like if they find a way to kind of catch a groove, they might be able to do something. I'm not sitting here saying right now that this team is going to do anything if they make it into the playoffs, but there's always that chance that they can get it. They get in and they could, you know, maybe win a game or something. But who knows? Lots changed, you know, the new offensive coordinator. We have no idea what this team really is going to do after firing DeFilippo. So they could really do anything at this point. I really don't think with this team, anything will surprise me. If they shrivel and end up just getting blown out by the Dolphins or finding a way to lose the two of the three next game of the last games, I'm not going to be surprised. If they somehow find a way to win all three, I don't think I'd be surprised. Just because we know this team is a talented team. And so, yeah, like I said, nothing will surprise me which way or the other. And if they somehow find a way to back into the playoffs, it wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, I'm kind of looking somewhat ahead while also kind of just keeping my eye on what's going on right now.
Just so you know, the Vikings are going to win the Super Bowl this season because we have implemented Operation Flacco. It's time. Stefanski's going to come in. Kirk Cousins is going to go on that magical hot streak in the playoffs. We win it all. The contract is validated. Stefanski will then go on to coach the Detroit Lions. That's how this all goes. We've seen it. We've seen it before. We've gone in. This is what they're doing. This is the playbook that Mike Zimmer is pulling from. And yeah, it worked for them. So of course it's going to work for us. Right, Yanka? Do you believe? Is Stefanski going to finally bring you around to team Kirk Cousins? Yanka? Yeah. You still there, Yanka? We lose you?
I'm still here. I'm still here.
All right.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think that he is going to. I think he's going to do a good job making the offense, make me believe in the offense again. But, yeah, I think Kirk Cousins is still a work in progress, so. We have a long way to go before I get there.
Okay. Well, we've done quite a bit here, and we got a smooth transition coming in to Dr. Ear firing some takes off for us about kind of his thoughts on JDF, where JDF was ranking from a coaching perspective based on the numbers they're looking at from Pro Football Focus. I guess, did you have any last words you wanted to fire off in terms of, you know, kind of whole situation, Cousins, offensive coordinator, skill positions, rest of the season, Stefanski, anything else you want to talk about before I guess you park the car and go back to your apartment?
Just let this moving forward. I mean, it's only three games. Honestly, just let Kirk Cousins pick 80 plays out of that whatever book that Stefanski has. Says these are the plays I'm most comfortable with. This is now our playbook for at least for the rest of the season. That's what the Vikings need to do. Whatever Kirk wants to run, that's what he has to run. And everyone needs to be okay with that.
Okay. Well, I like that. And I hope in whatever plays he picks, there's some options that you can use when Diggs and Thielen have two and three people on them. But that's it. You know, that's all. Stick with us here. Dr. Eager is about to come on. And give you some wonderful takes about, you know, the Vikings, Kirk Cousins, JDF, a little bit of Mahomes love thrown in there, of course. And that's it. We will talk to you at our regularly scheduled time this week to preview the upcoming matchup against the Dolphins. Talk to y'all soon. Well, all right, we have a special guest today, friend of the show, the good doctor, Eric Eager, coming through, because with all that's going on today in Vikings land, things are going crazy, the streets are on fire, and I had to bring in my good friend to get some of these takes off here. So, Eric's going to jump right in. Big news of the day, John DeFilippo, no longer the offensive coordinator for our Minnesota Vikings. From the perspective of the things that you track at PFF, I know that you guys have done a little bit of work in the background, kind of looking at coaches and kind of what value they're adding or maybe subtracting from the levels of talent that they have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do your numbers feel about the firing of John DeFilippo today?
Yeah, you know, so DeFilippo is a guy, you know, you look at kind of like what was going on in Philadelphia a season ago, and you always sort of wondered, you know, what did he contribute, you know, because he had difficulties in previous stops. And what's interesting, and obviously you can't untangle everything, but he rated poorly in our coaching metric, while a guy like Frank Reich graded a little bit better. Now that you see both of them on their own, Doug Peterson has continued to coach well, even though, you know, the results haven't necessarily been there for Philadelphia. So I don't know, you know, the DeFilippo hire I think made sense at the time, but ultimately it seems like he's been a little bit more, of a bust here. Not to say nothing about what everything else has been, you know, for the Vikings offense.
So where did it go wrong for John DeFilippo, I guess, based on what you're looking at? Because there's been a lot of talk, mostly because the Vikings head coach is kind of made that a topic of conversation, that the team needs to run more. They haven't been balanced enough, and that's the reason that they're losing. And that's something that you hear very often on traditional broadcasts when they're talking. I think they flashed a graphic even last night that showed if, you know, the Vikings rush X number of times, then they win, or they have a winning record. But when they don't get to 20 rushes, then they're 0-1 whatever. And so it's a prevailing thing that you hear a lot, is that, you know, if we rush enough or if we're balanced enough, then the team is just going to win. I guess, what are your thoughts on that? And it's a misguided take. Why is that take that seems to be so misguided such a prevalent piece of thought in the NFL, even amongst, I guess, our head coach?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, like, you know, we have these conversations, you know, I think in our own life a lot too. It's like, you know, we'll say something like, well, you know, if this job isn't, you know, a hardworking job, then it's not worth doing. Or, you know, if I can't do it the right way, then I don't want to do it at all, kind of thing. And you know, you see that all the times, and, you know, you kind of like, you squint at it a little bit in real life. But I think the same thing holds true in football. I think it's why a lot of teams don't run quarterback sneaks, for example, because they said, you know, if I can't turn around and hand the ball off to a running back and gain a yard, I don't think we deserve to be a team that gets a touchdown on this drive. And of course, like, that's a silly way to think about it, but it's exactly, I think, what these coaches, you know, think. And for us, it's sort of like, you know, if I can't run the football, if I'm one dimensional, then this whole thing feels cheap. And of course, that's a terrible way to think about it. But I do think that's sort of, you know, in the background. Same thing, like, at the end of games where you often don't see the team on defense that's giving up the game-winning touchdown, you don't see them call timeouts because they're like, I want to be able to trust my defense. If I can't trust my defense, then we have no business winning this game. And I think a lot of teams, like, get themselves out of the conversation in terms of winning because of those thought processes. And so, you know, the clear thing is here, like, running the football is something you do when you're ahead and not something you necessarily do to get ahead. The Seahawks last night rushed for 209 yards, and until about two minutes and 50 seconds left in the game, they had, you know, 6 points, right? They won the game because they played great defense and the Vikings messed up a lot. They ran the ball when the game was salted away, that kind of thing. So to me, I think it's just like sort of a psychology thing. People think that a lot of things in football are cheap, namely passing the ball, namely quarterback sneaks, and so forth. So they want to do the tough thing. They want to earn tough guy points. But unfortunately, on the football field, tough guy points are worth zero real points.
Shots fired on that one. Tough guy points are worth zero real points. So I guess I'll ask the other question, because you know, there was a strange thing happened, you know, last night and still happening today. As you get some analysis, you're starting to see various parts of the football world that often don't necessarily align coming into alignment in their thoughts or thoughts out loud, I guess we'll say, on Vikings, you know, quarterback Kirk Cousins. So I know you've had thoughts, you know, you had thoughts throughout the offseason in terms of what Kirk Cousins kind of is or isn't as a quarterback. You know, I've written some things about him. But then you start to see guys like, you know, Kian Fahey posting things today. And, you know, Kian Fahey was a devout Kirk Cousins supporter at times in the past. And so now you have, you know, a lot of different people posting clips of, you know, missed passing opportunities and, you know, poor ball placement and different things that, you'd kind of, you know, pointed out in the QB journal. I guess, how are you feeling? I guess it's got to be one of those things that feels kind of weird where on the one hand, your analysis seems to be proving correct. But on the other hand, the fact that your analysis is proving correct is detrimental to the team that you cheer for.
Right. I mean, that's the hardest part of this entire thing. I think PFF Greenline has been on Minnesota once this year. So I've either been neutral or rooted against the Vikings professionally this entire season. That's the difficult part. I mean, the Kirk Cousins thing is extremely nuanced, right? Because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say Kirk Cousins is garbage. That's clearly not true. He's an NFL quarterback. He's a starting caliber NFL quarterback. And whether or not you put him in like the second or third tier of NFL quarterbacks is mostly a part of opinion. It's what you value. That being said, the nuanced take was the Vikings were coming off a 13-3 season with a lot of luck, right? Case Keenum played probably as well as he's ever going to play. That defense played about as well for 16 straight games as they're ever going to play. They're as healthy as they ever going to be. And we saw a lot of those things, a lot of those unstable things fall apart this season. Another one of them was, you know, offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur that coached above his mind. So you put all those things together, and the foundation here was not the Vikings starting out from 13-3. You know, they're probably, and I think the Vegas total for them was a little high at 10, and that seemed offensive to a lot of Vikings fans. But you know, you put it all together, Kirk Cousins, even in the strongest of circumstances, 2016 with the Washington Redskins, had, you know, basically a 9-7, 8-7-1 type of record. And that, you know, and that's because of a lot of deficiencies that he has. He does not, you know, he doesn't seem necessarily great with the pass rush. He was very good statistically against pressure until last night. He was 0-7 last night. You know, he's very good at play action, but play action statistics are pretty unstable. Do you look at all those things and, you know, he has fumble issues, he has red zone issues. All those things made me wonder whether or not Kirk Cousins was not necessarily not a starting quarterback in the NFL. He clearly is, but a quarterback that you pay, because there's a lot of excuses being made right now on Twitter. The offensive line's bad. They're not using Dalvin Cook good enough. The play calling sucks. The receivers aren't getting open anymore. They don't have a number three wide receiver, as if not having two all-stars in the first two spots is not good enough. And to me, when you pay Kirk Cousins the type of money, you make the type of investment in him that you did, he is a no questions asked type of player. There's no questions asked about Russell Wilson. There's no questions asked about Aaron Rodgers. No one has time for any of Aaron Rodgers. You know, they hung on to McCarthy quite a long time because Rodgers should be able to overcome that stuff. No questions asked about Pat Mahomes. No questions asked about Tom Brady. I don't think Kirk Cousins is in that conversation. And if you don't have a quarterback that's in that conversation, you should not be favored to win the Super Bowl.
All right. I like how you threw Pat Mahomes there just on the sly. You think I wasn't paying attention, but I listen when you're talking, Eric. I listen.
I mean, Pat Mahomes is – so I've never been a part of draft Twitter so much. I interact with people and everything, but until I started working at PFF full-time, I didn't really pay a ton of attention to college football. But Pat Mahomes was somebody that I actually did want the Chiefs to draft and he has met and exceeded almost every one of my expectations. He's extremely fun to watch. And interestingly, the Chiefs played the number one overall defense in the NFL Sunday without Sammy Watkins, without Kareem Hunt, and without their right guard. And I don't see any Chiefs fans making excuses for how Mahomes played.
Whew. All right. So two more questions before I get you out of here. On the one hand, so there's the take that you made that I agree with 100%, that if you're going to, you know, pay top dollar for a quarterback, it should be a no questions asked type of situation. With that said, I also acknowledge, You know, your analysis bears it out. You know, some of the work that I've done bears it out that quarterbacks play is very contingent on what they have going on around them from a surroundings perspective. And the better quarterbacks are less influenced by it, but all quarterbacks are affected in large part by what's going on around them. If it was you and you were kind of setting for the Vikings, you know, what they should be looking at as we, you know, we move beyond this season and kind of think about what is necessary to maximize your chances of success with Kirk Cousins at quarterback, what areas would you be looking to shore up? Maybe your top two or three spots.
Yeah, this is uncharted territory for Vikings fans, right? Because there was always an out every single time they've had a quarterback. With Favre, it was, you know, Rosenfels and Jackson. With Ponder, it was Castle. With Teddy, I mean, I don't think that anybody ever wanted to get past Teddy, but, you know, there was always a contingency for when the quarterback that they had struggled. And now there isn't. And I think that that's why, you know, Zimmer resorted to sort of, you know, criticizing DeFilippo, because he's smart enough to know that criticizing Cousins, as Matthew Coller said, it doesn't do them any good, because they're partnering. They're going to get rid of Zimmer before they get rid of Cousins, statistically speaking. So this is our uncharted territory. So the issue is, you know, the difficulty of having a guy like Cousins as your quarterback is then when a guy like Sheldon Richardson has a brilliant season, which I think he is borderline having this season, it's going to be difficult to re-sign him, because he's going to command top dollar at a position that I think is increasingly valuable at the NFL level in three technique, especially with Griffin, I think, probably moving on. You're not going to be able to re-sign Anthony Barr if you wanted to anyway. You're not going to be able to shore up depth at cornerback, although I think they've had some young guys that have emerged here, so that's a good thing. Trey Waynes is a question mark, right? Because when I look at it, I think, you know, you need to spend your draft capital getting quality young offensive linemen that fit your scheme. And, you know, you have to, you know, emerge on a scheme here. You need a tight end that's going to be able to move the sticks. And, you know, I think the Kyle Rudolph seems like a great human being, but they have struggled behind him, and they even struggle with him now to get him the football. You need an athletic tight end. It seems like these teams, even the Chiefs, as I talk about, they have Travis Kelce, but not behind him, they have Demetrius Harris, who's a former basketball player that makes plays seemingly more than any other Vikings backup tight end. I think you need an athletic guy there. You need a number three option. And frankly, I think somebody like Jarius Wright would be somebody who they could bring back, just a reliable guy who can get open and catch the football, which is not something they've had there since they stopped committing to Jarius Wright in 2016. So, you know, Dalvin Cook's probably going to be fine, you know, but I think offensive line's huge, interior offensive line's huge, depth along the offensive line's huge. And I think you got to approach it, you know, basically from a lot of bodies, because you're not going to be able to pay, Remmers and Reef money to the next Remmers and Reef. So you're going to have to use draft capital. You're going to have to be, you know, pretty, I would say, creative in the free agent market. Those are things I think are important. And then you need to get some pass catchers that I think can complement Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, which will be harder given that you probably have to pay Thielen coming up.
All right. Last thing here before we get you out of here, Eric. You know, we joke a lot about, you know, Cousins maybe just needing to, you know, he's needing to go Joe Flacco, full Flacco once we get to the playoffs, you know, get hot for a few games in a row. And, you know, who knows what can happen? Well, it looks like all the cards are lining up now. New OC to wind down the season. With all the dudes, I really haven't gotten to check. What are the Vikings playoff odds at this point? Like, are we going to the dance, or how's that going to work for us?
There is a better than 50% chance the Vikings make the playoffs. They are at 54%. Their chances of winning the division are pretty slim, probably under 5%. But yeah, I checked this morning. It was like 53.8%. Oddly, because of that tie in week two, the Vikings have, you know, basically a half game lead on a lot of the teams that are underneath them. And interestingly, you know, there isn't a team in the NFC that's at 6-7 that I'm afraid of at all. Philadelphia is extremely flawed, especially defensively. Washington is probably dead to rights anyway. You know, the Packers probably could make some hay, but they have, well, they're 1-0-1. The Vikings are against them, so they will not, you know, if tied with Minnesota, there's no way they get in. So, you know, there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of things pointing in the Vikings direction. The difficult thing is, and honestly, I'll eat some crow if this happens, but the difficult thing is for me to see the Vikings as a sixth seed going into Chicago and winning a game. It's difficult for me to see them, you know, as a sixth seed going into Dallas and winning a game. And even if they do, you know, we've already seen how they've done against the Rams and the Saints in big spots. Neither team really played well on either half. You know, the Rams played terribly on one half of the ball on that Thursday night game, and the Saints didn't play well offensively in, at US Bank Stadium. So, you know, it's tough because I think coming off last season, coming off the Minneapolis Miracle and all that kind of stuff, it does feel like a letdown coming in and being the sixth seed. But the Vikings have a very good chance of, you know, repeating as you know, a playoff team. And I believe this is the first time they would have done so since Gus Frerotte in 2008 and Brett Favre in 2009.
Whew. Gus Frerotte.
Yeah.
Love me some Gus Frerotte. Well, Eric, as always, it's always a pleasure. Love talking football with you, even in these short stints that we got this time. But, yeah, don't want you getting any trouble over there. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for giving your thoughts. And I hope to talk to you soon, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, man. You have a good one.